Lynn with the On Purpose podcast with two special guests from British Columbia. This is in the spirit, as it were, of making my arrangements for the end of my life and after the end of my life. In fact, I'm more excited about my life ending than dying in a way, because I'm making very detailed lists of all the things I'd like to see happen after I die on my behalf by the hand of other people. And I've put this off for so long, but I was exploring the web and I found Willow. Michelle Pante and Rina Lazar, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
A pleasure.
My name is Rina Lazar. I am a personal growth and development junkie. I just can't get enough of learning about what makes humans human. So I have a pretty eclectic background. I have an architecture degree and an international affairs degree. And then I became interested in conflict resolution and did some peace building work with Israelis and Palestinians. I seem to be drawn to the big existential questions in life. And then when that project ended, I approached Michelle about starting something related to death and dying because I knew she was in this field. And I realized that it's a subject that I've been drawn to all my life. And again, it's really related to what makes us human, like what makes life so precious? And using death as a portal to live and love fully now, it was a very passionate question for me. And so I did some training called the Beyond Yonder Virtual School of Community Death Caring in Canada. And it was a 10-week course on various aspects of end-of-life studies. All of it was fascinating, but again, the meaning-making part of it was probably the most precious to me.
Meaning making. Okay, I'm just going to make a note of that. And all right, and Michelle.
Hi, I'm Michelle Pante. I have spent my adult life seeking connections between issues and ideas and people and striving to affect positive change in different ways. I started out very hands-on as a counselor in a transition house for women who were abused, environmental education, some international development, and studied social work and sociology. And was learning about business nonprofit collaboration, so very interested in how business and nonprofits can work together to affect change. And that led me to go to business school. And I've done work in all sorts of things, from marketing with credit unions to education and professional development work with the Urban Development Institute, a little bit of community education work at the Irish Museum of Modern Art. So always open to like, let me try this. How does this affect change? What about these people? Oh, those are some interesting models. Let me learn about that. Through a series of personal losses that I wasn't really paying close attention to, I was just moving through them and getting on with life. I got stopped eventually when I had a car accident, which I was physically quite fine, not very injured, but it led me to do some healing work. I had done gazillions of hours of therapy in the past, but this was a different sort of healing work that started with body work, and it led me to tap into my grief. And I really had the visceral experience of grief as a pathway to healing. So I wanted to do something with my world of work that was connected to grief. And I still profoundly believe that being with our losses of all degrees supports us to heal and to be well and to be really present and to live and love fully. So that led me to become a funeral director. And I was on that path when Rena approached me about doing something together.
Nice timing. I was just really drawn in by the thoughtfulness of your site and the different tools that were there in line with what I was thinking, like seven tools for making sense of life and death, a workbook to explore the reality of your mortality. Come on. I mean, that's fantastic. So I wanted to know why you called the organization or your business Willow and how that came to you.
I'm going to let Michelle answer this because it was her idea.
Okay. When Rena and I came together to create this venture, we really wanted to have a big impact on the world. We really wanted to do something transformative. We want to have this transformative work impact everyone. And it seems that majority of people who are drawn to our work are women. And I had this vision of women, like a woman putting her hand on her friend's arm and saying, "Have you heard of X? like, have you heard of this company? Have you heard of X? I wanted it to be one word. And we're really interested as well in the relationship between transforming our own lives, our communities, and the planet. So we wanted it to have some connection to nature. And then we just started looking at names of trees or crystals or shells or all sorts of things. And when we landed on the word willow, that stuck. And the reasons are, and they're explained on the about page of our website, is that it does feel like willows are really expressive of so much of what we want to make happen in the world and what we want to evoke and manifest in people. Willows are, they're ubiquitous. They're everywhere. They're, you know, almost everywhere, all over the world. And they're also all these different species. So that feels like our human race, you know. And they are strong and resilient, and they're also flexible, and they have medicinal properties. So they're a source of healing, a place of comfort, I think, for many, and solace, as well as in some traditions, they are connected to ideas of immortality. And then in other traditions, we talk about, you know, the weeping willow. So it just seemed to have so many different layers that evoked the essence of what we want to both bring to the world through our services and products, and also what we want to evoke and manifest in others. The idea of being soft and strong, of comfort and beauty.
What I'm finding, and I think this is what you're talking about, is that as I prepare and make it a priority each day to advance my planning for the end of my life and possibilities leading up to it and what happens after, like the more I plan out these details and make lists and let people know what's going on, and the more I do feel alive, the more I share what's real for me now, and including being realistic that I'm not here forever. It takes it away from, this is a long question or lead up, but it takes it away from what other people are doing, what other people should be doing. It's the fact that I'm taking responsibility for my one life that I am given. And so I'm really getting it now that this does free me up to be more fully here. So is that what you're talking about?
You're like the poster child, Lynn.
Exactly. Like, I don't think we need to answer that question because you just answered it. Like, you just said everything we could possibly say. I'm really thinking, what can we add to that? You know, you've experienced it. And what we do is we guide people through experiencing the exact same thing. Like, so some people come to us with the knowing that, oh, I need to do this stuff because it's important and it'll save people who live on a lot of trouble if I do this. And that's their reason for coming. But then they discover what you discover. Right? Or other people have a sense that this is going to really help them live fully now, and they want that. Because, you know, there are many books written about this. There are many movies written about this, how one of the quotes in our workbook is, life is only precious because it ends, kid. So even if we know this intellectually, it's only when we dive into like really thinking about what's important at the end that we realize what's important right now, right?
We've all experienced loss of people in our lives. And I've been with a number of family members and friends when they're dying. And so it's not just sort of theoretical or about reading about it. I'm thinking, okay, well, this is what I liked about how this person died. And this is something I would like people to be aware of, not just by chance or like maybe they'll think of it, but telling them ahead of time. These are the things that are going to be important to me. It's like an ultimate art form, how you leave. I mean, it's a statement, really. It's an opportunity to really encapsulate what's important to me. I love it when I hear about a musician, for example, who, as they're dying, they're completing their current album. Like, I love that. I want to be just going out on a wave.
A few of the things that you said, Lynn, speak directly to some of our tools. Like, the idea of learning from the past is one of the exercises that's inside the workbook you mentioned, Seven Tools for Making Sense of Life and Death. And it's expanded upon in the online program we have based on the same workbook. The idea is to really articulate what worked and what didn't in your experience from what you've participated in, what you've observed, even what you've heard about. You know, it can be someone close to you, but it could also be an author you follow and you heard something about how their end of life went and you loved that or you didn't. And we have a tool called 9 Things to Include in Your Departure Directions, designed to give people guidance about what kind of information to leave. And so those 9 things can be either very detailed and prescriptive about here's what I want to have happen after I die, or there are more general guidelines. But we invite people to begin it with words of intention and words of guidance. Why are you doing this? What are the values that are informing your, what we call your departure directions, those guidelines or instructions? Because inevitably there are things that need decision-making that you didn't think of. And it can be really difficult for those left behind to feel like they might not be doing what you want. But if they're clear, like, you know, this is what mattered to Lynn. So based on knowing that, here's my best decision. That makes a difference.
I just want to add, I mentioned before, like meaning making. So death or mortality, what's so important for people is that their life had some meaning, right? Mm-hmm. So in that particular tool, 9 Things to Include in Your Departure Directions, it's all about how you're cared for after you die, what meaning can be woven into that whole process, that experience, you know, for you, if you believe that you live on somehow, or for most people, it's the meaning that is left for the people who you leave behind. Again, when you start to think about what meaning do I want to weave into, let's just say my end of life rituals or the way I'm laid to rest, when you get clear about that, and then you look at how you're living right now at the moment, like, well, hey, like sort of like a check, like, am I actually living that way? I love what you said about musicians going out with their final album. I totally agree with you. And that's a great metaphor for the kind of work we're doing.
It's more than a belief. It's really just knowing that we live on beyond our physical lives. So like, that's part of what I'm leaving is like, know for sure that I am right with you. Don't even think twice about it. Take that as a given that as soon as I've died, I'm not gone. So I think of that in terms of when you talk about people, when they're not there, you know, you might talk about somebody or refer to somebody. Even when we're talking about somebody who's alive, pretend they're in the room. Make sure that what you say about them is something that you would feel comfortable with them hearing you say. Yeah, even if it's somebody you don't like, be thoughtful as to how you're expressing about them. And so even with my family members who've died, if I'm referring to them, even if it's not an easy thing that I'm saying, I am conscious of them hearing me talk about them. So how does that fit in with anything that you've shared with other people?
What I think about, Lynn, is that belief, the clarity you have about I will be here after my body's died. I hear you saying that you want your people to know that's yeah. Your belief. And for all sorts of reasons, including that it might give them a lot of comfort, but whatever, it's important to you. So that's something that I would invite you to express in your heart will. So we have a free tool called How to Write Your Heart Will. And the heart will is really your message at the end of your life that you want to leave to a community at large. So distinct from an end of life love letter, which is, we have a tool around that, a 5-minute love letter exercise, where you're writing to one person particularly, a lasting message that you would leave with your important papers so they can have it after you're gone, after your death.
Or you give it to them.
You give it to them before you die. You could give it to them now if you like. And the Heart Will Guide is something that we have had people use. They write it as an exercise of self-reflection. It's about knowing who you are and discovering things perhaps you might not have known before. There's 23 prompts, some questions that get you thinking, and the idea is to read them, and you know, you might just choose to answer one, and that's what I want to focus this heart will on. In our experience, the heart will has been both printed out and given to guests at a funeral or an end-of-life ritual, and it's a beautiful keepsake. Because it's, you know, your words to, what do you want them to know about yourself or about what you think about this or feel about this experience called life? And we've also had people have their heart will read aloud at their end of life ritual. And it was very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. So I think your people want to know that belief you just expressed. Been probably many other things, like those messages that you think are important, like not what do other people say about you at the end of your life, what do you want to say? And because you don't know when you're going to go, that's why we encourage people to do these things now, And of course, you can have different iterations. You can do another one.
And the other benefit of doing it now is the impact it has on your life now. So Sometimes when people write this heart will, for example, it's actually a manifesto for living. It's actually that document that you have to go back to when you're not feeling your complete self, when you're feeling a little down or you forget, you know, what's important to you. So you go back and you read your heart will and you're like, oh, right. It's beautiful. I do it.
Yeah, it's like a return to home base. It's like tapping your third eye and tapping your sternum. That's a good way to come back to base as well. Yeah, things that are just really true for each of us to come back to that. So you've mentioned tools and values and meaning. Oh, grief as a pathway to healing, Michelle. Do you want to say more about that?
Sure. Rina, feel free to jump in or after, if there's things that I typically talk about that I'm not remembering. It's my experience that it's the avoidance of the painful feelings of loss that really cause the damage. I believe that sorrow and loss, grief, they are energy in motion. I need to let them flow. So life is full of losses. And when I actually have the courage to just sit with fear, the uncertainty, the sorrow, I usually have lots of tears and I feel cleansed and renewed. I have to move the grief in order to make room for the joy. And I really believe that grief is present because love is present. You know, there's something that was meaningful or important and it's gone, whether it's temporary or long-term. And that is the way it is.
I just want to add that sometimes we can't pinpoint the source of our grief. Like I have a meditation practice and sometimes I just find myself weeping without really knowing why. And ancient traditions, probably several of them, will say that the ultimate source of grief is our fear of death. You know, the fact that the people we've come to know as ourselves, our identities, we know that this is going to die. Like this identity known as Rina will not last. Something else might last, but this identity in this body. So grief is universal. Whether you are mourning a particular death or something else is not necessarily important.
There's that common expression that time heals. Somebody said it's actually the mourning process, not time, because lots of time can go by. And if you're not mourning that loss or those losses, or even the small losses of daily life, the things we need to let go of every day, there's things that we can grieve. So like you say, the pain of it is in the resistance, just like the attachment is the suffering.
It's to allow yourself the attachment with the knowledge that it won't last because nothing lasts, good or bad. And to move through the feelings and to know that grief, in my experience, is iterative. It's not I'm going to mourn and then I'll be done, right? It's messy. There's no time frame. It looks different for each of us. It's totally normal. And we need to get better and be kinder with ourselves in terms of trusting our process. We have a process. You're in trouble if you are not ever expressing the sorrow, I think.
Yeah,
like it's going to show up in your life in some other way. So it's really to know that for some, the depths of our sorrow is connected to the depths of our love. It's called a love letter for a reason. We want it to be loving messages, and we have our own process about getting to those messages. Creating some urgency helps us move through the layers of emotion to use a timer and know that you might take several opportunities to create the letter you actually want to leave as a lasting message, but something is better than nothing.
I think it's such a great idea because otherwise there's lots of pockets of silence. There's lots of blank sheets of paper that could have been written on. You know, you don't want people just to have to sift through your diaries to find a mention of them. We all want to hear about how other people see us and think about us and love us. I mean, we want to hear that, right?
Yeah, I mean, both my parents are dead. They did not leave messages for any of us. I'm one of six siblings, and when I hear about people who did get those messages, I just feel like, oh, I wish. And of course, I also wish there were so many things I could have asked them and talked to them. And I also regret that I didn't have that conversation or give that letter to my father in particular. I did end up giving one to my mother, and it made the world of difference.
Well, thank you, Rena, for sharing that. And you're making me think about when my dad was in the hospital last fall. None of us knew how much more time there was. So there was sort of this suspension of time, like where, okay, you're alive right now. We're together right now, you know, and this may not last for too much longer. And I remember this one night I was in the evening sitting with him, and I just, you know, like I was sort of like trying to prompt him to, you know, is there something you want to say or do or write? Or is there somebody that you want to talk to? Can we get somebody on the phone? Or, you know, like I just wanted to sort of help him make the best of a limited time. Like I didn't know what he wanted. And then I realized it was actually more letting go of what he wanted and what I wanted. And so I started to thank him, you know. I said, well, thank you for this and thank you for that, you know. And that was a lot better. That was a lot more to the point, you know. So I was really glad to find that place.
That's great. That's really beautiful. After my parents died, I found out that my brothers had written letters to my dad and shared it with them. This is way before I'd been involved with this work. So like, I was angry. I was like, why didn't you tell me? Like, why? You know, like, yeah, what a great thing to, why? How come you didn't tell us? Like, why'd you keep it to yourself? I was just like.
And Lynn, when we first started doing this work, I was inspired by some of the participants in our workshops who said they had written letters and others were prompted to have conversations with people who were in their lives now, inspired by this exercise. So I decided to basically do the oral love letter with my dad. And that was very nerve-wracking in anticipation. But I basically told him everything I could think of that would have him feel appreciated and respected, and asked his forgiveness. And I also asked him what he was proud of with me. And we had a beautiful, very teary conversation. And flash forward to, I think it was 2 years later, a couple of years ago, I was on the other side of the country and I learned he had a heart attack and he was in a hospital. Sounds maybe odd to say, but it was a beautiful thing to know that while as much as I would want to have been with him while if he died, and he didn't die, I felt at peace. I thought, you know what, we're good. He has heard from me everything that I would want him to hear about what he means to me. And that was such a relief for me. And so we really encourage everyone to check it out. This is a free tool on our website. It's willoeol.com. Go in the shop and there's actually 5 free tools, including the 5-minute love letter, how to write your heart will, 9 things to include in your departure directions, a manifesto for living, and also a reality of our mortality planning checklist. That checklist really is a signature of our heart-centered, inquiry-based end-of-life planning.
It's kind of the map for, you know, everything you could possibly do. And the idea is to just look at it and say, you know, what am I drawn to doing first?
And it includes a category called grieving and healing, which I don't know if that exists on any other end-of-life planning checklist.
Willow, E-O-L, end of life.
Yeah, willoeol.com.
Yeah, it's really great that I found you on I don't even know what I was looking for on the internet that night. Like I said, I've been making a lot of arrangements. And one of the things, through a series of steps, I ordered a long-lasting bench, a metal bench with plaques with my birth date and some little words, and then a quote plaque with some important things. I'm leaving directions for a death plaque when the death date is known, and some words there to be added to the bench. And it's sitting by a tree facing across the way to my grandparents and a little brother who only lived a few days. His remains are there as well. So I'm looking across at their headstone in a cemetery near where my dad grew up. That's a special place. So I'm quite excited about finally making plans based on, like we talked about near the beginning, just based on things that have been happening that some work for me and some I would like to do differently. And I want all my ashes in one place and pour it into that plot, continue to make it a family plot again.
That's great. That's great, Lynn.
I'm really glad you found us, not just because we had an opportunity to talk, but also because it's been such a pleasure to get to know you and to hear about your life and your beliefs around death and dying.
It makes our hearts sing to connect with you and to really to feel in our hearts and spirits and minds, like how much you get what we're up to. We feel very seen. Thank you.
It's mutual.